Good morning. Today is Friday, August the 11th. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire Chief Billy Gillespie. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Brian.
Are you having fun yet?
Hey, plugging along.
You guys hosted, it was Rotary you guys hosted on Monday.
Yeah, we had the Eureka Rotary Club for an offsite on Monday down at Station 1.
Anybody get lost?
No. Everybody seemed to find it okay.
No, I meant once they were in.
Oh, and got now lost, in the front door. Take a left-hand turn to the apparatus floor.
Oh, I see.
We had him guided.
Yeah, perfect. Let's see if we can find something worthwhile that makes a little bit of sense for today. I don't know if that's possible, but that's okay. Albert Camus. Nobody realizes that some people expend tremendous energy merely to be normal.
There you go.
And some need to spend a little bit more energy.
Sometimes.
Huh? Yeah. Well, you guys have more fires, huh?
It's been staying busy, both here locally, and if you stretch a little farther for local, the county, the North State.
Yeah, the regional.
Definitely summertime.
It's kind of unsettling at this point, because when it's foggy now during summer,
right.
I'm looking for brown tinge. The fire in the Chetco area. We've got the fire around Happy Camp. We've got a bunch of little
Orleans,
ones down
right
south.
Right now at Ruth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've talked about that unsettling nature. What is the impact to the volunteer fire departments? Is there any, or is it paid staff? And
I know where you're at. It's an impact to all the fire departments. The wildland side in state response areas pulls heavy on CAL FIRE. And like the last week, we had two fires in southern Humboldt, pulled heavily on the volunteers. We picked up a third fire that was in state response area in the McKay Tract, but everything was deployed south. They had structures threatened, so it was Humboldt Bay Fire, and we pulled a unit over from Samoa, as well as Green Diamond personnel that the first night were on the fire in the McKay Tract.
Now, was that lightning caused?
That one, I am not sure what caused that one. Definitely not lightning. Unable. It had creeped around for so long, 2.5-3 acres, it was even hard to find where the origin was.
Now, we also saw, National Forest Service fire trucks.
Yes.
That's a different breed of cat.
Mm-hmm.
Not the guys on board, but those trucks are completely different.
Yeah.
Are they designed for wildland fires or? Because it's a totally different
look. Yeah, it's a different
beast.
Look. They design their engines to be more useful in more of the off-road environment, the back road type environment, so that you'll see a lot of them. They're four-wheel drive. They've got ground clearance. They're built with pumps that are different than what you see like here in Eureka for most of the rigs. And
so they're not interchangeable with you guys?
To a degree, but they've got specific purposes.
Do they also have that joint responsibility, or do you have MOUs with these guys? Are they around even during the non-fire season?
You get CAL FIRE's got certain stations that they will staff during the wintertime, typically on contract, or if the governor upstaffs to, like when we saw the drought period when it rained like crazy this last winter, they did have staffing that went along. So we see some of them, but they downstaff a lot of their people in the wintertime.
It's 8:19.
It's not the place they hope to be in spring training, but the San Francisco Giants have the rest of the summer to play, and they'll be bringing their exciting brand of ball to Kika Thunder Country 101.5 FM. They've got a lot of games left on the schedule against contending teams, and playing the role of spoiler is a definite possibility. Be tuned in for all the action, all season long. Brought to you on KINS, in part by Angelo's Pizza, Wyckoff's Plumbing, Electrical, and Hardware, and Living Styles Furniture.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time is 8:20. 24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Gillespie. Billy, the fires that we normally have this time of the year around the developed areas. Mm-hmm. McKinleyville will normally have a couple of them.
Right.
Fortuna will normally have a couple.
Right.
Eureka has more than a couple.
Quite a few more than a couple.
Okay. The areas that have been the traditional areas of response
mm-hmm.
have been cleaned out, we've been told. Okay. North of Target, out
right.
in the swamp area, the old city ruins
right.
that are out there. Down by Palco Marsh.
Foot of T Street.
Et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Has it been cleaned out? Are you not having to respond to those areas?
We're still going there. You know, the over the last, probably the last month and a half, when we really start seeing the fires go again, we're still going fairly regularly to the foot of T Street. We're still down behind the Bayshore Mall pretty regularly for fires. People see them down along the trail. We're periodically down by Pound Road, down off the end of Herrick, or just south of Elk River. And we're still seeing the fires along the waterfront. It's interesting because while we're not seeing necessarily the built-up camps like behind the Bayshore Mall, what the crews are running into, especially in the morning, the weather's been decent, people are just throwing their sleeping bags down in the grass. That way they're not seen, we're still seeing the fires down there.
To the same frequency?
It's pretty consistent day to day. You might go a day or two without a fire, but then you might have two or three of them the next day. And so like the foot of T Street, we've had vegetation fires. We've had some homeless camps that are tucked into the brush out there that burned up. We've been out pretty much all spans of the Samoa Bridge for people under the bridge with fires or their camp catches on fire.
Would it be wise mm-hmm. for the city of Eureka to get either seasonal help or somebody out with the weed whackers and just start knocking the grass down so that if they are there,
right.
the fuel isn't.
Right.
And if they're exposed, maybe they won't be there.
Right.
Would that make sense?
Kind of the habitat control.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things, and we've run into this in the past, years ago, trying to do some maintenance mowing down in the Palco Marsh area. In fact, right adjacent to where Chevron's bulk plant is. That grass in there, it's fairly open. That grass will go 3 feet tall in
it's
the
grass.
Summertime.
It, boom, yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I've always contended, I don't want to have any of us on watch if that grass fire ever catches one of those tank vents on fire, and have pushed that. And there's been times in the past fairly consistently we were able to get that area approved, but we run into a stumbling block with the Coastal Commission about the mowing of grass, because as has been said at points in the past, they don't want to see a park-like setting. They want to see a natural setting. And even with the mowing, we had, I can remember in the past, working with Chevron, working with the city for that, and we had to get somebody in to do a nesting bird survey ahead of time. Certain months of the year, you couldn't mow because there could be nesting birds in the area.
Have you called Ryan? I mean, now that he's on, I mean, he knows what the situation is. Is
right.
this something where an individual commissioner could step in and not necessarily waive, but at least be an advocate and say, look, you know, gas and fire don't mix.
Right, right. You know, we were able to get a long-standing approval for a 100-foot buffer adjacent to Chevron. So that helps us. But in the other areas, they weren't real open to a lot of mowing. You could do road maintenance or maintain trails, but they didn't want to see everything mowed down. And so we end up out there for fires, and over the course of a summer, you start seeing darkened patches, black patches, where the grass is burned off, and so at least,
well, I suppose if it
that
burns,
starts giving us a little bit of a
yeah,
buffer.
You, yeah, yeah, you don't have to go back.
You burn it into the next location.
Could you do the equivalent of a controlled burn and just kind of be there, but, you know, geez, we're not sure. We don't want to get in. You know, the
right.
concern about the hypodermics and all that, and just kind of set up a perimeter like you do with commercial buildings?
We can in the aspect we do. We still make sure nobody's in there, you know, make sure the people are out. And we've got the ability, you know, rather than if we have to stretch fire hose 1,200 feet to get to a location, or we can bump it to a road or a trail that's naturally there.
It's kind of like a break.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll manage it to that point and then make sure the perimeter and everything's out at the end of it. Yeah.
I would think that would be safer than getting
going
in with a grass fire and, you know, as quickly
exactly.
as those things can spread.
Exactly. And with the winds that we get, you know, you look at the afternoon winds, it can push fire around in grass really fast.
Hopefully we'll have some. That would mean it was cleared off today.
There you go.
How much does humidity impact what the outcome is?
It has a pretty big impact. Like this morning coming down, you know, windshield wipers on, it's drizzling like crazy coming across town. That's gonna slow any fire that's burning way down or let it kind of skunk along. Now, when it gets to the afternoon, if it clears off and you've got something smoldering, then it's got the ability with the wind to take off. But here on the coast, we still see the grass fires.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Fire Chief Bill Gillespie. Talk Shop, in whatever form it takes, is presented by CDH Painting and by Redec. Bill, looking at some of the different challenges that are out mm-hmm. there, you know, on the national scene, you see some of the stuff. Locally, you see some stuff. I know you're trying to get creative,
mm-hmm.
stretching the dollar and increase the efficiencies, et cetera,
right.
et cetera. How is the two-man response unit working out? I mean, you see
right.
you see those rigs out a lot more, which mm-hmm. every time I do, it's like, attaboy, we're not having to run the big rig. Attaboy, there are two out there instead of three. It feels, after a year and a half, that this thing is doing what you and Ken Woods were hoping.
It's, you know, the reality, it's sort of like a Band-Aid. It got a unit back into Station 4. One of the things, though, we've run into with it and looking like at the fires downtown that we had, 4th Street or Ice and Cold Storage, it still caused a longer time frame before we were able to get a pump unit on scene versus when that station was staffed with a three-person engine. And we've run into a few different times where the crew got on scene from that unit first due to a structure fire. And they can give a report on conditions and then start to go to, like, rescue. But that's really all they can do because they don't have ladders, they don't have hose.
So more property loss potential.
Potential.
But quicker life saving?
From the fire. Yes and no. Because while they can get there and they can go in for a search, they can't take a hose stream in with them. If you've got a fire burning in one room, you know you've got potential people inside. If you can knock that fire down or hold that fire in that room, you bought those people time. And so it's sort of a, like I said, a Band-Aid. It got the station staffed again. You know, it works for medical aids. We've had to park it a few times and leave it on scene, like in a CPR case, when both firefighters jumped in the ambulance. They're running a code on somebody. They make a broadcast, you know, squad 8174 is unstaffed, left at such and such location. And one of us will run out, or somebody will run to that location. Somebody will run to the hospital and pick them up to get them back on it. Whereas if it's a three-person company, you can send two people on that code, and one person can follow and meet them at the hospital. So, you know, it's allowing us to have the station staffed, but we're still hamstrung with it.
Obviously, the goal isn't just to have a station open.
Right.
I mean, who cares if it's not
right.
working
you
positive?
You want to be able to, ultimately, to be able to provide the best service. And ideally, what we found, the best service would be a three-person engine company at that location.
Rid of it?
What's that?
Would you do it again?
To be able to staff the staff the station with a lack of funding to support the three-person, I would say yes. Ideally, the goal still for me and for the department is to find a way to get back to that three-person staffed engine company.
So if you went back,
the most bang for the buck.
If you went back to three,
mm-hmm.
What do you do with these rigs?
We've just got the one at this point, and potentially, you know, we could park it wherever, maybe store it at a fire station or store it wherever the courtyard ends up potentially going.
So it'd be mothballed.
Potentially. And then that way, if you did run into a situation again where the funding wasn't there, it does give the ability to bring it back out, at least to staff a station.
But probably at that time, it'd be out of code.
It possibly would, because every few years, the safety standards for fire apparatus and vehicles change at the national level.
So why not have that concept apply either to mm-hmm. an ambulance, a substation, something along those lines, mm-hmm. that it's additional service? And, you know, if four isn't the one by
right.
Myrtle and West isn't the one, mm-hmm. great, knock that baby down,
run it somewhere else,
put it somewhere else where the medical aids are more apt to occur,
mm-hmm.
and at least you have presence right. there instead of handicapping elsewhere.
Well, the other side too, if we were able to get, you know, an engine back, so we had the four engines in the truck, because a full response, you know, we run all these calls, we're the only game in town for fire. We commit four units to a structure fire just based on the different tasks that have to happen on the initial response. If we were able to get back to that staffing with four engines and a ladder truck staffed, and the economy was able to pick up, you could potentially staff that unit with two people, and maybe in the downtown area to supplement the truck response. It chases a lot of the medical calls, and you don't put the wear and tear on the ladder truck, because we've had the ladder truck since about 2012. Well, it's in the ballpark of about 30,000 miles on it at this point, and the call volumes aren't going down. 2016, we were over 6,300 calls for service, and that was 300 calls higher than the year before.
So there is a role for this unit.
There is potential.
It may not be just at that station.
Exactly.
So why is there such a concern
mm-hmm.
about keeping that station open?
You know, with it's interesting, because that station is busier than even than some of the others. We have to spread across the community. And I was even asked a question here recently. North of town, is they're looking at an annexation of a property.
Would yeah, the be, old mill.
Yeah, yeah. Would it be beneficial to put a station out there? And I said, no, it wouldn't, because that station would basically serve that location. But there's not a lot of other development out that direction versus being able to guarantee a fire engine. Station 4 spread around as we're configured right now, because we're really, at this point, the other station locations likely aren't moving anytime in the near future. It would make more sense to have an engine there. It's still going to be first due as they potentially annex and build up there, but it also serves the core of the community.
Yeah, I would think maybe a better location might be, I don't know what, Bazaar, Disco, Payless, mm-hmm. Mall 101, whatever that's called, that,
right,
complex,
that complex
just west, I guess, of the Slough
right.
Bridge.
Right.
Then that gives you back into town, but it also allows you to roll out on the highway as well.
Yeah, you can get out on the highway. And that's one of the beauties when we had an engine at Station 4, it's quick down to V Street and out onto the highway. And it can cover there, but it can still run back into the greater Eureka area as well.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:43. We'll be back with more.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill Gillespie. Billy, this time of the year, you're into the new fiscal year. What is the number one challenge that you're hoping to take care of this year?
You know, right now, we've got a lot of focus on filling some vacant positions that we've got. We've got four individuals in background right now. We get them through the background, through the physical, through a psych evaluation, and then hopefully in early to mid-September, we've got four new people in the academy, so we can get them back out, get them into the stations at the end of that, and help us out. We've got a few open positions right now from people that have left, and we've got a few injuries going on right now, so it's trying on the staffing. The rest of the folks that are there are pulling extra time to be able to keep units staffed.
With injuries, mm-hmm. It sounds like it must be permanent. Otherwise, you're not going to backfill in behind.
Right, right. We've got the injuries. You go through a period of time. Once they get released, they go back on as well. You know, we see, unfortunately for us, a lot of back injuries. You see shoulder injuries, knee injuries, and then we've also this year we had through the process of our annual physical, one of our members ended up coming up or was found to have cancer, and so they've been going through treatment. It was caught early. Cancer is presumptive for firefighters because of what we're exposed to. And so, you know, we're working internally for different steps, decon and that kind of thing on scene to try and lessen that. With a firefighter, you're five times or more increased chance of coming down with cancer over the course of a career. So it's a big thing for us. It's kind of scary.
Any one type?
You know, we see a lot of different stuff. It could be just anything you can get.
Thanks for coming by.
All right.
Don't catch anything, man.
Yeah.
See everybody Monday.